Hi, this is Lori Janik. Welcome to the Legal Affairs Podcast Series with your host, Finley P. Maxson.
Welcome to the NAR Legal Affairs Market Podcast. This month, we are going to discuss short sale payoff fraud, or flopping, with Robert Hagberg, the Associate Director of Mortgage Fraud Investigations with Freddie Mac. Welcome to the podcast, Rob.
Thank you.
First, can you explain to the listeners the basic fraud patterns that you are seeing and some of the variation?
Sure. So before I kind of jump into that, I just want to stress that short sales have always been kind of a longstanding part of our loss mitigation efforts here at Freddie Mac. They're not something new. And it's Freddie Mac's expectation that when we engage in a short sale, that there be transparency to the roles that everyone is playing, disbursement of funds, that the highest and best offers are being rendered, and that there are no hidden agreements relative to the property during or after the short sale. And it's important to note here that as we discuss the concerns with short sales, that sometimes we're talking about out-and-out fraud, and in other instances, we're simply talking about business practices that are repugnant in that they exploit or they may injure a distressed homeowner or Freddie Mac or the bank or a mortgage insurer. Having kind of put that disclaimer on my comments, we see a couple of trends, and they are evolving, as your question alludes to, Finley. One of the first things we're seeing is we all know flopping typically involves what we'll call an A to B to C transaction, meaning the short sale is the A, the flipper is the B, and then the end buyer is the C in the ABC, the way it works. And historically, as these started to kind of come to our attention, what we saw was that the B2C function would actually close first, and the funds from that would be used to satisfy the demands of the short sale lender who held the lien on transaction A, reversing it, closing them in the wrong order. As lenders became wise to this, as they came to understand that, and as certain states began to have prohibitions around what we'll call a dry closing and requiring wet funds or actual funds to be brought into the closing, the way these transactions were being conducted actually evolved as well. And that was kind of where we saw the advent of what we'll call hard money lenders who were sometimes go by names by like DOFA for a day, transactional funding are some of the phrases that we commonly see out there. And what these companies offer to do is to provide the B in the ABC with 24 hours of financing so that they are bringing good funds or wet funds to the closing to purchase a property from A and then to immediately sell the property to C. This does two things. Technically, it meets the governance of the states that require wet funds. In addition to that, it permits them to meet the requirements of lenders who want to see proof of funds, buyers own funds before they'll approve the short sale. Now, the challenge with this is many of these DOFA-a-day and transactional funding websites offer what's called a proof of funds generator or a generator of verification of deposit. Things like that are the names they go by. And essentially, anybody can put any address and any sales price they'd like into this machine, as it were, and it immediately sends a proof of funds letter, whether they're actually using that service or not. And so many of the flippers are fraudulently pulling these letters off of these websites and using them as proof, quote unquote, of wet fund. And it really is that easy. We went out to a couple of them, and I personally went out to one website, entered the Freddie Mac address, and I had proof that I had been approved for a loan to purchase it for $200,000. Within snap of a finger, I had that letter on my email that I could have then walked into the short sale lender's office and said, here's my proof of funds as the buyer, that I have my own fund. And this is done in order to conceal the end buyer. What we're now finding is, what we're finding is these steps are being taken to conceal the end buyer because they don't want to disclose that they have a higher end buyer to whom they're actually ultimately going to sell the property. The next trend that we're seeing has to do with BPO manipulation or valuation manipulation. And I think it's generally understood that as an investor, Freddie Mac accepts a broker's price opinion in lieu of a full-blown appraisal. As we consider and as our lenders consider whether a short sale will be accepted on our behalf. And in the past, we've always talked about appraisal fraud and how appraisers experience a lot of pressure, upward pressure, on the value that they attribute to a property. Well, in the short sale world, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing downward pressure being put on the BPO value and the pressure being applied to the real estate professionals who are conducting these BPOs. We have out-and-out bribe. We had a situation recently reported to us by a real estate agent who contacted our office And what she had reported to us is that she had received two envelopes when she went to the subject property to conduct the BPO. In one envelope was a piece of paper that said, we would like the value to come in at X. And in the other envelope were two $100 bills. And it really is kind of that overt. One of the new challenges we're seeing is there are websites out there now where a false bid of repairs can be generated on the subject property from a fictitious repair shop, showing that maybe some of the latent defect that we wouldn't see to the naked eye, problems with the electrical system, maybe problems with the plumbing, things of that, functional issues that certainly impair the value of a property and its marketability, are now being used, and they're handed to the real estate agent who is performing the BPO, or are being presented to the holder of the note as they consider the short sale as a rebuttal to the value that the broker's price opinion offers. We're also seeing instances of reverse staging, which we all know what staging means. Typically, when we show a property, we spruce it up to the best that we can and make it look as appealing to prospective buyers as possible. Anti-staging involves taking steps to make the property as unappealing as possible to the real estate professional conducting the BPO. So we've always heard kind of the story of sticking shrimp in the curtain rod so it smells, things like that, just keeping the property in disrepair. We had one property that we were looking at in the Midwest where short sale facilitator, the middleman, the one who's flipping the property, was actually in control of the property. And so he had left all of the windows open on the first floor of the dwelling through the rain to cause the appearance of water damage. Now, once the dry season came, it all dried out. But in the interim, when the BPO was being conducted, to that real estate professional, the property appeared to have significant water damage. And it was a way of, again, call it anti-staging or reverse staging of the condition of the property. All of these instances involve a real estate professional conducting the BPO, either knowingly or unknowingly allowing himself or herself to be compromised. We've even seen instances where the agent who is conducting the BPO may not be making the best comparable choice as possible. And I'll get into that in a little more detail when we can move on to the next section here. The last trend that we're seeing are related to disbursement, paid outside closing, or kind of the movement of funds through the transaction. Initially, payment for short sale negotiators or for second mortgagees who may hold a lien against the property were being paid by the buyer or the seller, or in some instances, even the real estate professionals would chip in a portion of their commissions outside of closing and were not being listed on the HUD-1. This practice is unacceptable. It is our expectation that pass-through of all money be noted on the HUD-1. What's more, we suspect that this is probably a violation of RESPA, somewhere that really none of us want to go. Now, a seller's credit to the buyer for about 3% is being shown on page 1 of the HUD-1. So you've got this credit going from the seller side to the buyer side, which is not so uncommon in today's environment. The trick is, when you look at the contract, the buyer never asked for the credit. What you then see is on page 2 of the HUD-1, the credit is moving over to the short sale negotiator, to the facilitator, or to the second mortgagee. This is a means of pulling money out of the seller's bucket, or the investor's bucket, really, since they're covering the loss for the seller on a short sale, without them really knowing where that money is going to, often to an individual or an entity that we as the investor would not ordinarily agree to pay through the short sale process. Now, those are kind of the three trends that we're seeing. And the bottom line for us at Freddie Mac is that we expect transparency in the short sale of our loans, as we expect transparency on all aspects of our business. None of us in the real estate or the mortgage finance industry can truly assess the risk of a transaction when material information has been concealed or manipulated. All known offers need to be remitted to the lender for consideration. Like appraisals, BPOs should be completed as independently of influence from interested parties as possible to obtain. And all funds exchanged between the parties in a transaction need to be expressly shown on the HUD-1, both on the preliminary HUD-1 as well as the final, and they need to be memorialized in the sales contract and any ensuing addenda.
Well, that's a lot of information. Thanks, Rob. That's very interesting. You kind of touched on this, but what role has a real estate licensee played in these frauds?
Sure. So as we look at these fraud schemes, we find that real estate licensees play a variety of roles in our investigation. So some are willing participants in a scheme. Some of them are just simply turning a blind eye to things that they probably should know or should recognize as being inappropriate. And some are genuinely kind of blind to it and in the dark. For all intents and purposes, are really kind of innocent bystanders to the manipulation of others who are involved in the transaction. And as you would imagine, the real estate licensees play the role, of course, obviously, of listing agent or selling agent, but we also see them playing the role of the short sale negotiator in some instances. Many times there are folks out there who are working both, wearing both hats. They're acting both as a real estate agent as well as the short sale negotiator. In addition to that, we may even see them wearing a third hat, which is that of a buyer slash flipper. They're the ones who are in all three of these roles. Arguably, or it appears to us, for the purpose of expanding their span of control over how these transactions are being run. Some of the specific actions that we see licensees participating in involve typically the MLS activity as well as BPO. So kind of looking at the MLS, we see occasionally some instances where a property is listed on the MLS in such a way that it appears it's being done to discourage offers being made. And this is typically the case when there's a predetermined buyer for the property, usually a family member or a friend of the seller. In those instances, what we're finding is that the intent is to keep the seller in the property. They're simply trying to reduce the amount that the seller owes against the property, and they're doing using the short sale as a vehicle by which to do that. We're currently investigating a real estate team, and the whole team that specializes in conducting short sales in which the property will ultimately be sold back to the seller or a member of the seller's family. We regularly receive calls here at Freddie Mac to a variety of departments in which real estate professionals are contacting us, and what's alleged often in those complaints or in those calls is that there are listing agents out there who are refusing to let them show a property even though there's an active listing, or refusing to entertain offers that are being placed on the property or are being tendered on the property. And in some instances will materialize itself after we've accepted the short sale offer that the listing agent has presented. And oftentimes the offer that the plaintiff was tendering was significantly higher, which leads some creed to the idea, perhaps, that what's listed on the MLS should really truly be just what the market value of the property is. The reason we rely on the MLS listing is that it's the true test of, is the offer being put out there truly what the market will bear? Is it representative of what the property is worth? The other area that we see our real estate licensees being engaged in has to do with BPOs. And we, as I alluded to earlier, there are instances where the BPO agent has been compromised. And typically the way that's done is they're being put into contact with someone involved with the buyer side of the short sale. So rather than the seller of the property or the listing agent being the point of contact for access to the subject property, instead it's the buyer or the buyer's agent or the buyer's attorney who is the point of contact. And this is a challenge to manage because, unlike appraisal, BPOs have very little governance and they don't receive the level of scrutiny that an appraisal receives. See instances that are much like the appraisal fraud cases we investigate, instances where it is clear that the BPO agent is selecting comparables that are not really representative of the subject property, but will allow him or her to arrive at a predetermined value. We had an instance recently where we had a property that was situated on a lake, and lake property can always be a little tricky anyway. And in this instance, it was located on a little neck of land between two very beautiful recreational lakes, and the property itself was very nice. Now, the comparables that BPO agent provided in support of her value were, on paper, perfect matches because they were properties that had lake access as well, but very different types of access. One was on an industrial pond rather than a recreational pond. One was actually on a canal that led to a pond. Again, a different type of market and a different type of buyer appeal. And then the third was actually on the same recreational lake as the subject property. The difference in this instance was the property had been subdivided into multiple lots, and the house itself was surrounded by about 14 trailers. So the subject property is actually a trailer park, in essence, obviously not comparable to our property. And all of these factors drove down or put downward pressure on the assessed value or the attributed value on the BPO. And these are the kinds of things that are of concern. Now, one last role that we see real estate professionals playing, and this is the one we most often see, thank goodness, which is that of ally to those who want to pursue short sales and to pursue them in the right way. We frequently receive calls in servicing, quality control, fraud investigations, borrower outreach, Homestep here at Freddie Mac from real estate agents who recognize that they've witnessed something inappropriate and they want someone at Freddie Mac to know about it. On behalf of Freddie Mac, thank you. We are grateful to those of you who've reached out to us. Please continue to make those types of referrals, and it's important for you to bear in mind, unlike us, from from where we sit, you're a witness to both the good and the bad that's occurring within the industry, and your shared experiences and cooperation certainly assist us in combating fraud and other inappropriate acts.
So how prevalent is the problem right now?
I don't have a specific number for you, but what I can tell you is that short sale fraud and other servicing-related frauds are definitely the fraud du jour and are definitely our greatest area of concern and focus at the moment. While we're still seeing what we'll call traditional or origination-related fraud, short sale and REO sales are really becoming our primary focus at the moment.
So when you receive a complaint and you begin an investigation, what actions does Freddie Mac take if you do find short sale payoff fraud or flopping?
In instances where we believe that we have found that the actions of any real estate or mortgage professional was involved in, if those steps have injured Freddie Mac in some way or have harmed our interest in some way, there are a couple of steps that we take. Our primary line of defense is to add an individual or an entity's name to our exclusionary list. For those of you who are unfamiliar with our exclusionary list, this is a list of, there are about 3,000 names on that list today, of individuals and entities no longer eligible to participate in Freddie Mac programs. That list is updated on a monthly basis and disseminated to all approved Freddie Mac sellers and servicers to help them understand which loans they service or are selling are eligible for sale to our company. It's important to understand that for a real estate professional, should a name appear on our exclusionary list, that individual or that company would no longer be eligible to list Freddie Mac properties in the event that it was an REO. They would be ineligible to represent a buyer or a seller on any purchase transaction if that transaction were sold to Freddie Mac. We take this very seriously. E-listing someone is not something we do lightly, but in instances where we've gathered sufficient information in our minds to demonstrate that someone's integrity or their business competence or their business model is harmful to us in some way, we need to protect ourselves, and that's our first line of defense, is to place names on the exclusionary list. Second, we do work cooperatively with law enforcement. The FBI, the IRS, and the U.S. Postal Inspector's Office are all very aggressive in pursuing instances of what they believe to be fraudulent activity, and a real estate professional certainly could be subject to an investigation by one of those entities, and we do share our information with them and work cooperatively with them. Thirdly, when we really think that an individual's behavior warrants it, we will make referrals to regulatory agencies as well, those who not only regulate but issue licenses. Well,
thank you. Are there any other resources that you would recommend to the members?
So Freddie Mac has quite a bit of information relative to fraud generally, but about servicing and short sale fraud on our website, and you certainly don't have to be an approved Freddie Mac seller or servicer to access that information. It's out there in the public domain because it really does benefit everybody if they have access to what we know and what we can share. In addition, we are continually updating our site, and there is a fraud component to the Freddie Mac website, and we try to keep that information fresh as we see new things coming up. Another resource is the Freddie Mac Fraud Hotline, and if I can just leave that number here, it's 1-800-4-FRAUD-8 or 1-800-437-2838. If you see something inappropriate or you see something questionable, please call us, run it by us. A member of our fraud unit will be available to answer your questions and to take that information from you. Two other resources are the same ones I referenced earlier. Contact law enforcement. The FBI is very interested in these matters, as is local law enforcement. If there is someone in your community conducting any business that you find questionable or as of concern to you, it's perfectly appropriate to make those referrals to the FBI. I think they would welcome your call. And then, of course, there's always your real estate boards. These are your governing bodies, and they can often speak both to matters of ethics as well as some of the unique nuances properly conducting business in the area where you work.
Well, Rob, thanks very much. That was very helpful. We would like to remind our audience that this podcast recorded on March 9th, 2011. Information provided in the podcast may no longer be current, and listeners should confirm independently its accuracy.